The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the kind support of Autoria, Source Elements, and RSPE Audio Solutions.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast. I'm Julian Rogers, and in this week's edition, I'm joined by James Richmond and Russ Hughes. We're going to discuss developments in, it says in audio in 2021, actually just 2021, we don't need to restrict ourselves. Russ Hughes spent the 80s as a synth programmer for many top artists. He went on to spend several decades writing and recording. He also did a stint running commercial post facilities in Soho, London. In 2008, he founded the Experts websites after seeing many audio professionals didn't have free access to high quality content. The rest, they say, is history. Russ, welcome.
I'm eating an apple. Welcome. I just thought I'd let everybody know that.
Thanks for sharing.
Not sharing it, mate, just telling people.
James Richmond is an Oxfordshire-based producer, engineer and multi-instrumentalist. He's worked for Solid State Logic and has written for a number of Australian publications since the 1990s. Previously, he was an IT networking consultant. Welcome, James.
Thank you. Yes, hi, Happy New Year.
Any fruit-based products in your hand at the moment, James?
I've got an Apple MacBook Pro. Does that count?
That's an easy. Is that a nice segue into the first? We're going to talk about the shit show that was 2021, are we?
Ooh, yeah.
And try and make it positive.
We could lead off with the demise of one fruit-based tech product, because if you've got a BlackBerry, then it's not even big enough to hold a door open. It's, what use is that? Anyway, talking points. What we've got, the format for this is we've got a list of stuff that we've splurged onto our show notes, and we're just going to pick them in the order that suits us, really, and takes our fancy, and discuss and talk about whether or not we think they were notable points in 2021. So I don't want to go first. I'd like someone else to go first. Russ, you choose one first.
I'm just considering how, if we've noted them down, they cannot be notable.
I see what you've done there. Okay.
It is all positive. Is there any negative stuff we're going to bring? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't know. Where do we start? We could start at the end of the year. We could start with the inevitable one early, or we could leave it till one last thing at the end of the show. Let's leave it till the end of the show, shall we, James, to one more thing, and then that will be the kind of great reveal of 2021. We'll do it in true style of the brand. So that will give you a clue about what our one last thing will be at the end of this show today. So, sometimes it's the little things that make the biggest difference. No, actually, it's often the little things that make the biggest difference. And I don't know if you're a Synchro Arch user of either Vocaline or Revoice Pro, but I've been working with those guys for over a decade, saying, listen, you make great technology. Nobody does what you do with your alignment products, but they do look pretty rough and they're hard to use. And in 2021, Ultra came out in 20, and then in 21 came Vocaline Project 5, which was like, wow, this is like nothing they've made before. And also, they did a real load of work on both the ARA and the Audio Suite stuff in Revoice Pro. And if you've been a Revoice Pro user, if you use it in Pro Tools now, it's like a plugin at last. It's like, I don't know, James, you use it. It's dead easy now. Super easy. And they got this thing called Smart Align. In the old days, and if you ever used it before, you'd have to like chop it up so that it matched. If there was a gap there that shouldn't be there in the original but was there in the new one, or vice versa, it would throw it right out and it just wouldn't work. So you had to go through and create a workflow. We'd have to chop all the individual bits of audio out and then align each one. Now it knows the gaps are there, and it figures out what's a gap and what isn't a gap and what's in both and what isn't, and then aligns it. And so they're workflow improvements. They're not like massive, hey, we're giving you a Ferrari, or this is the best plugin to sell your kidney to buy it stuff. But they've just improved their original offering and made them really, really cool now and really useful. I don't know if any of you guys use their stuff, but it's what they've done with their stuff is brilliant in 21.
I'm yet to try it, but what I was just thinking when you were saying that is to appreciate the significance of lots of things, you need to remember or have knowledge of what it was like before. So it's a bit like, I don't know, I remember talking to a young guitarist, and they didn't get what was so significant about Jimi Hendrix. And it was like, yeah, because you've got to look at what guitar was like before that, you know, that kind of idea. I remember years ago with back in my teaching days with trying to show people who wanted to do kind of like impossibly tight hip-hop doubles, specifically on rap vocals, and showing them how to do that manually. And you just saw their eyes roll back in their heads, and they're just like, oh, this is just too dark. I can't be doing with this. And it was possible, but, Vocaline existed. Didn't have access to it in that particular situation. And it was kind of like, yeah, it probably would help. But even so, just the idea of just being able to go, how do I make that happen? Here you go, press that. That's the answer that those guys were looking for. And this...
Yeah, it was kind of genius wrapped up in complication before, but now it's genius wrapped up in easy. And it was the amount of people you talk to, they'd go, well, I do a bit in Melodyne and I do a bit in Auto-Tune and I do a bit in Revoice Pro. And like in Revoice Pro now, you can do all in Revoice Pro and it's really, really quick. So the audio suites act like plugins. It's just as they should. And you can actually use Revoice Pro now without even opening the thing most of the time. And you just work within the DAW. And they're one of the most prolific companies when it comes to ARA implementation. They've worked really hard to get ARA working in Logic, which was a ball ache anyway, because it didn't work properly because of Apple, not because of ARA. They worked very hard to get that fixed. They'd get it working in Pro Tools if Avid could get I had to stop myself then. Avid could organize the ARA implementation. Is a much more political.
Yeah, that I guess that's going to be, if we were doing a what do you want from 2022, that would be at the top of the list for a large number of people.
But wouldn't that have been at 21 and 20 and 19 and 18 and 17, all the way back to 1955, I'm guessing. I think it seems like forever that Pro Tools users have been asking for ARA, isn't it?
Hmm.
Anyway, so yeah, you're right, Julian. But they've taken something very convoluted and made it really simple. And who doesn't want simple?
Yeah, sure. James, you haven't said anything. Is this something that you've experienced of?
Yeah, so I've got an earlier version of VocalLine. Because I do a lot of instrumental music. It's not something I dip into a hell of a lot, and so I was unaware that there was an update. I should probably check it out. That might be on my list for the next week, I think. Because, yeah, no, it was a bit of a pain, and I would dip into Melodyne and Auto-Tune and then into the earlier version. I think it was version 4 I've got a license for. Yeah, and it was a bit of a pain.
Go and try it. SmarterLine is just a miracle.
Right.
Okay.
Because it just knows where all the gaps are. Which is brilliant.
So not hearing much resistance to this one, though, although I'm big hand up here of kind of like, yeah, got to try it, but I get it just because I know the pain of the old ways. James, do you want to pick one? What's your...
Well, for me, it's probably the hybrid engine for Pro Tools. That's had the biggest impact on my workflow, for sure.
Okay. So how's that changed your set?
You know, previously, HDX1 user, so single HDX card in a Mac Pro. And, you know, the Mac Pro has enormous resources, and I was simply running out of voices and had to make a choice on a daily basis about, you know, managing resources with the HDX card. So to shift into the new way of working with the hybrid engine means that I never run out of voices. I've got an endless amount of native power in the Mac Pro, and I use the HDX card for actually what I need it to do, which is ultra-low latency monitoring on the tracks that I'm currently recording. And for it to be free alongside the support contract was a bit of a surprise. I guess we're not used to Avid doing those sorts of things. There's usually an attendant cost to everything. It was a really positive move for them, and very, very pleased. Okay. And it's given HDX a real lease of life. So I think it's done a lot for Avid, because I think so many people were moving on to other platforms, to UA audio interfaces and what have you. And I was possibly looking at doing that. I do, in fact, have an Apollo. I'm recording through it right now. But HDX, in certain situations, I need it for certain situations, and it really works better than anything else, having that single mixer window. So yeah, that's been my major workflow improvement this year.
It's not hard to see why for someone in your position, absolutely.
Can I ask you a couple of questions about it, James? First, you say you're using the Apollo.
Yeah.
Is that because if you use the hybrid, you still have to use it like a HDX card and you can't... Could you run the Mac audio now through it while we were recording this?
So that is the reason I'm using the Apollo.
You still can't use it, but it's a bit of a pain.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the way in which I work, I'd have to pipe the Mac audio in either over Dante, or an analog feed out of the Mac Pro. The annoying thing with the Mac Pro is the analog audio out is a headphone level audio out, which I never really understood why they did it. I really wish we had SPDIF digital audio coming out of the Mac Pro, and then it would have been a whole lot easier, and I would have been using HDX. The other slight issue I have is because I'm running multiple computers and they're all running off Dante, my studio sits at 48K, pretty much fixed all the time, and we record this in 44.1, so it's just easier to boot the boot a laptop up and record off that than reconfigure the studio and change the clocking on dozens of devices. Even though most of them do chase, it's just, you know, that's just particular to my setup here.
My second question is the hybrid automatic?
Does it flip in the Pro Tools mixer?
Yeah. So basically, if you want to track zero latency, you just hit a button.
Yeah.
Flips it onto the chips.
Yep.
Do your job. When you finish the record, it flips it back to native.
Yeah. And so if you've got a plugin that doesn't you only have an HDX version of it, a DSP based version of it, it will bypass, and vice versa. Mm. So if you've got something in the native mixer that you don't have a DSP license for, and you're trying to track through it, obviously you can't track through a native plugin. It will just bypass that plugin.
Or you could, but you'd have to work natively. So you could track in native, could you?
Say again?
So if you didn't want to use the hybrid engine, you could use that plugin, but you'd have to use it with latency and it would be native.
Yeah, that's what...
It's on a per-track basis. Yeah. This is the thing. You enable it globally and then you've got the green button where you can go between native and DSP.
Yeah, mode. And you can disable the hybrid engine if you want to work the old way with, you know, far...
And with hybrid, does it print the audio when you go through those plugins, or does it just monitor through them?
No, you're just monitoring through them.
So, but you can print the audio like the old days where you can bust it out to another audio track
or something.
Then,
yeah,
okay, cool.
Mm. The thing about this, I mean, I can't help thinking that I get the sense that Avid were kind of a bit astonished of how well this thing works, and they're sort of, wow, you know. But of course, it arrived with Carbon. I was a very early user of Carbon, and I've got one here, and it's just kind of like the thing that they developed so that Carbon worked and made sense. I think they kind of went, well, would this work with HDX? And then it blew the lid off things, you know. But that's where it came from, and it works brilliantly. I mean,
what it means is anyone that has an HDX One card doesn't. There's probably no reason to upgrade if you've got a modern computer. So a Mac Pro here, 2019 Mac Pro, it's got so much power. If we end up talking about the M1s, then, you know, maybe there'll be an interesting distinction between those, between the M1 architecture and the old Intel architecture. But for an Intel machine, it is absolutely stonking. Mm. The only reason to go up to HDX2 is if you need more simultaneous inputs, if you want to go beyond 64 in, 64 out.
So that's still that limitation is still there?
That limitation's still there, yeah. Yeah. So if you want to go more than 64 inputs at once, then you need to go to HDX2, and if you beyond 128,
the fact about that, though, the fact about that is it's a policy decision, not a technical decision, which has always annoyed some people.
Right. I guess it's, you know, and I would love to have more inputs from an HDX one. Absolutely. I could use them. There is something to be said, I guess, for guaranteed performance. And I guess that's the trade-off that professionals make and people who they need to be able to press record and know it's going to work. But I guess that was also the argument for the 32-channel limit, which has also gone away.
Well, that's gone away. That was the argument. I think it's a business argument rather than a technical one, to be blunt. Mm.
I wonder if there's any gains to be made sort of going down rather than up, just because for so many people, 64 is like more than they're going to use anyway. So it doesn't really make any difference.
That's a lot of banjos to have it playing at once.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, I'm pretty sure the economics of this probably wouldn't stack up, and it's something that would never happen. But just conceptually, Carbon is more than a lot of people need, and it's not a cheap device. You know, it's a $4,000 box or whatever. It's like, but something that was more kind of like in the ballpark of like an Apollo Twin, but following that thing of like very reduced DSP, but enough DSP to be able to track two tracks through it, but access that hybrid engine power and that low latency stuff, that'd just be awesome. It'd suit a lot of people who wanted that Pro Tools near zero latency performance in Pro Tools, but absolutely without the scale of kind of like needing to necessarily even track a small band, just kind of like, hey, it's just me here, but I still want zero latency.
That would be fantastic. I guess that's a question of what are Avid doing at the moment. Mm. Are they predominantly a software company that makes a bit of hardware, or a hardware company that also has a software product?
I'd love to see it, but I don't think I don't think they'd imagine they'd sell enough to make it a profitable venture. Put it that way.
I'm not sure because the Apollo Twins are probably, I imagine they sell many more Apollos than, the desktop interfaces than they do the rack mounts.
And hold that thought, because this might be a good time to bring up the Universal Audio Vault 1 and 2 and the fancy ones with the compressor, the 176 and 276. Because that was interesting, because if we're talking about Apollos, well, UA broke their model this year to some extent and did a non-DSP interfaces. Which is an interesting move. I mean, it struck us all at the time of like, is this what? Why are they doing this? This isn't their thing. What do we think about those? I actually thought they were okay. I mean, it was kind of like my biggest objection to them was the design, the fact that it wasn't like it was a desktop interface that hadn't got like a canted front and a bit of a wedge to it, which. Day to day, I suppose, the little things do bother you, but actually, in terms of kind of like a concept and idea, that's execution, not the actual idea. Interesting one, though, just because, you know, an Apollo for a two-channel interface is at the expensive end of things, and there's loads of people who just want an interface, especially these days. What do we think of those?
Well, I like them, and I have an Arrow that I use as a portable record, you know, I think it's called the Apollo Solo now. And that's always a frustrating device because you run out of DSP so quickly, even with a couple of channels. So having something, I guess Universal Audio wanted a bit of that Scarlett SSL, you know, the small SSL.
Because it's big.
Market, you know.
It's a big market.
Yeah, it's a huge market. Almost everyone I know that isn't a professional has either a Scarlett or one of those SSL devices. They don't have Apollos. So, you know, the hobbyist market completely sewn up with that style of device and they wanted a piece of it. Great idea.
Because the whole religion of UAD has always been the chips, has always been the process in the DSP. And suddenly changed it. Boom, this has happened. Absolutely, it's a real paradigm shift for UA. I think people underestimate that. And I think they've had challenges as well because the chips they use are really in short supply. And they are working on the Shark chips, which aren't the most modern of chips now, are they? So there's lots of technical challenges they have, but they've still got to grow their business. So I'm guessing they're thinking of other alternative revenue streams that don't use the dependencies that the old products have had. A bit like Avid. It's very similar to Avid, but in a different way. As we all remember when Avid sort of kept going and so almost painted themselves into a corner with HDX. And I found creative ways like hybrid to come out of that corner. And I think UAD are having to do the same thing.
The question will be, I think, will Universal Audio ever do purely native versions of their plugins? Is this the direction they're going?
They're out there already. That's the point. There's a few plugins that they make, but generally they are a plugin studio, aren't they? Really, they are a publishing company for plugins, a bit like Plugin Alliance or other brands. Because a lot of the stuff that people use on the UAD platform, UAD don't make. Softube and
all the Brainwork stuff, and yeah, there's a lot of
Brainwork stuff. Yeah, and so that's available. A lot of it's already available native. Sometimes it comes out native after they've made it for UAD. It starts as a UAD exclusive, and a lot of the Softube stuff then comes out as native as well.
Mm. But the products that aren't available, so we're talking the API 2500, Manly Massive Passive. I don't think they're available.
You're right.
No, you're right. Anywhere. Some of those aren't.
Yeah, it'd be useful. And I wonder if this move into purely native interfaces signals that at some point maybe we'll get purely native versions of those plugins.
Yeah, who knows? As I say, there's been quite a paradigm shift in terms of hardware. I'm not sure if they would go as far as to make their stuff native as well. Who knows? Hmm. But that's I think that's more to do with contractual decisions they've got to make with the people who make the plugins.
And copy protection, I guess, as well. That, you know, the thing about the Universal Audio hardware is it acts as a big iLock, a big dongle.
Yeah, it's a big dongle, yeah.
There is that, but also, I mean, I wrote a piece recently about reasons to use UAD. And part of it was the exclusivity of, like, there's some of my favourite UAD stuff is the exclusively UAD stuff that they do rather than the stuff that's kind of subbed out, if you like. Mm. And
do you think there's a reason for that? It's exactly what we're saying. It's golden handcuffs, isn't it, to keep you on the platform?
Absolutely, yeah. But the point is it works, because some of the stuff that keeps me coming back to UAD is specifically because I really like that particular plugin. And if you want it, you have to go there. You know, yeah, it makes sense.
Achoria has a wide selection of software effects, including 3 compressors, 3 filters, 3 preamps, and 3 delays you'll actually use. The latest release, 3 delays you'll actually use, includes Delay Tape 201, Delay Memory Brigade, and the unique and experimental Delay Eternity. A bundle of selected effects, called the AudioFuse Creative Suite, is included with all AudioFuse audio interfaces. Visit Achoria.com to find out more on the effects you'll actually use.
We all agreed that it was significant, but it was all approving, actually. I don't think anybody had any particular beef with this idea.
No. It was just a shock for all of us, I think, when it happened.
Sure. Russ, pull one off the list. What do you think?
The UJam Cat video. So I'm serious, because I don't know about you, but you see so many, and I make half of the videos I think are quite, I don't think they're bad, but when somebody makes a video that's actually different for our industry, it's ironic that a lot of the videos made for our creative industry are pretty conservative. And yet, if you watch the Finisher Dynamo walkthrough video, that's got a cat in it. And I think lots of the UJam videos are incredibly creative and incredibly funny. And I always watch them because they make me laugh. And you kind of laugh your way into buying things, which is a brilliant marketing strategy. They're so funny. Watch the walkthrough video for the Finisher Dynamo, but many of them. But as I say, a psychedelic cat in a video. It's got to get. I'm not a cat fan either, but I love this video. So that was one of my happy moments of 21.
Fair enough. I have nothing to.
That's
add
all
to
I can
that.
Say about it. It's just an original funny video to show you how to. It's a training video for a plugin, but you end up watching it thinking you're watching an episode of, I don't know.
Absolutely, and the fact that you're not being entirely serious doesn't mean that your product is
oh no, it doesn't take away from it at all. And the great thing about UJam products anyway is they're pretty single knob products. Do you know what? They're brilliant like that. Is they take away all this kind of, like, you've got to go on a master's degree to use it. Yeah. And it's like, open it and just start twiddling and see what happens, which in a sense is almost what you do with your hardware synth, James, is to, like, just turn a knob and see what happens and see what the magic of the serendipity that comes out in musical creation.
Yeah. Mm. Feeling like you're in a training video for a payroll software doesn't necessarily
exactly.
add to your...
Exactly. And as I say, most of the videos tend to have the same narrative arc, which is, hey, here's a product, here are the features, here's 3 producers that are going to tell you how wonderful it is and how they've sold their children to buy this plugin, and then download a demo and buy it yourself. And okay, well, perhaps that's the way it works every time, but generally a bit of creativity doesn't go amiss now and again, does it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're there. James, go on. What would you like to talk about next?
Well, I think we should probably talk. We've mentioned it in passing, the worldwide semiconductor shortage. Uh-huh. Which I came up against recently when building myself a new studio PC workstation. Trying to find a graphics card in stock at the moment for non-crazy money is impossible. Mm. And it's having an effect all the way down the line. Last year was not a massive year for studio gear acquisitions for me, other than the Trinov. I don't think I bought a major piece of gear, so I'm not entirely sure how much it hit the music industry, music technology side of things.
It hit it bad. But it hit it bad. Yeah.
So
chips and ships, the term is we use in house for that.
Yeah.
So there was a shortage of chips, and there was and shipping went from shutting down for the pandemic to reopening, not having enough ships, and then everybody had to pay I heard of a guy here in Belfast who used to bring chairs in from China. The chairs cost £40. He used to pay £10 to get them in from China. He's now paying £70 a chair to get them from China.
Right, yeah.
It's those kind of shipping charges went through the roof, if you could get shipping at all. Chips became like the stock market. Talked to a couple of people who make the stuff. And they've started, you can bid on chips now for your products. And they go through the roof. And people buy chips.
Speculate on them,
just to resell them and make money on them. So the cost of making products, these are lots of people like UA and PreSonus and Audient and all those kind of hardware manufacturers have had to either swallow the cost of it or put their product price. I'm surprised products haven't gone up in price. I'm shocked.
Right. Maybe they're running out whatever stock they had, you know, in warehouses in China or in the US or Europe.
There isn't any.
There
isn't. It's like rocking. Right. No, it's rocking horse poo. Some of these chips you just can't get. And some of them had to redesign their products to get to put because they couldn't get the chip anymore. Mm. So,
yeah, there's a few companies who've been...
Yeah, a few companies rebuilt their, completely redesigned their hardware.
And some have been sitting on large stock inventories who've been extremely relieved of the fact, which is kind of, you know...
And so, some of them actually made more money out of selling their chips than they were selling their products.
Wow. Well, we might find that continues this year then. Well, we probably will find that, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose a massive great ship blocking up Suez didn't really help, but
that didn't help. But yeah, that had a lot of people sweating, probably even Prince Andrew, in our industry. Because as I say,
I'm relieved to know that's not on the list. So okay, right.
It'll be on 2022 if this court case gets the way we think it does.
All right, so I don't know. We should move on to some other stuff. I'm gonna go for we lost Al Schmidt this year and Rupert Neve. That's some big audio names and
big hitters. Yeah,
two people who had continued working well in so far into their old age and still maintained that kind of respect across the whole industry and with track records that won't ever be equaled. I mean, nobody is ever going to have a list of achievements as long as either of those people in their respective fields, and they're kind of complementary. The two kind of work together, actually. What an extraordinary couple of people, really. And I don't think we could do this without at least mentioning it. I don't know how much there is to say on either case, but I mean, one is the story of recorded music from the point of view of doing it, and the other one is the history of the technology that went into. Moving us from scratchy, nasty shellac through to some of the best-sounding recordings that still hold up today. So,
Chick Corea, of course, we lost. Huge, huge legend. Lots of
Charlie Watts.
Charlie Watts, of course. Hmm. Yeah. Jim Steinman, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Prolific writer and... I'm just thinking about other people but loads and loads of real legends last year.
The Production Expert Podcast is made possible using Source Connect Now from Source Elements, the free way to record high-quality audio over the internet. Need to record an interview or a podcast like this one remotely? With Source Connect Now, you can. Using a Chrome browser, you'll get ISDN-equivalent quality audio without the need to install any additional software. Register for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
Where do we want to go next? I think Russ, I think it's your turn.
Yeah, I think coming off, and I say this story every time, Jules will start to slash his wrists in a minute when I start telling this story. But a few months ago, I watched a video from Mix with the Masters, which was Chris Lord-Alge mixing some vocals. And just watching him move around a desk was really, really quite profound for me because I just thought, I like that workflow. I could live with that. Now, I'm not going to go out and buy myself a big G series, but I tell you what, when I saw the SSL Big 6 arrive, I thought, now that's a really cool piece of kit. We could just plug a mic in as the audio interface, work like a mixer, like at a show, set that up, get that down. Then you can mix through it if you want. You can sum through it. It's got SSL, E-series EQ, G-series bus compressor, all that kind of stuff. And I think the SSL Big 6, and for the money, is remarkable. I'm possibly going to buy one.
Because your finger was kind of like hovering over the button last time we talked about this.
Yeah, so. I'm just waiting to sell some stuff on eBay, building up the fund.
All right.
But I just fancy having a bit of hardware in the studio. I think there's something to be said for tactile stuff. I really do. I think Plugins leave me cold most of the time. They're just a means to an end.
I've said my piece
when you get a knob and turn it. Yeah. There's something special about that, yeah. I think.
I've said my piece about this. I don't know, some relatively recently when we discussed this on a previous podcast. But James, you're consoles. Would you? Is this something that interests you at all? I mean, you're so network heavy and everything these days that it sounds like you're kind of. Actually, you're not very in the box at all, actually, because you use that to connect a load of... So I'm thinking about your modular and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
But it's always a conversation between recall or not. And for me, I would have a tracking console absolutely in a heartbeat. The Big Six, I think, is a fantastic idea. It's brilliant for a lot of people. It doesn't have enough channels for me. I have 64 input sources here. Yes, I'm not running them all at once. I do use patch bays. I really have 64 inputs on my Pro Tools rig because I don't want to have to repatch everything, and I like things being half normaled. So for me, the minimum number of channels I'd look at a tracking console would be 24. Anything less than that, and it simply doesn't work for me. But I think it's a fantastic idea. I think they're going to sell a lot of them to people who are running, 16-channel interfaces, and they just want to pull something up quite quickly. I think, what if you've got 4 mic preamps on the big... Like, people tend not to buy SSL consoles for the preamps, but they're good to have. And then having that E-Series EQ is really the killer feature, I think. I think it also...
Well, an alpha channel is going to cost you over $1,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just one single alpha channel. This virtually has all the alpha channel built into it.
Mm.
And I had an alpha channel, so I flogged that just before Christmas. Got 700 quid for it, I think. It's just the idea of just having something there where I would just like, if the podcast was on this morning, I'd just turn the mic up. Well, the mic would be in it and just plugged in. Just boom, go away you go. And there's something to, it's probably the live sound guy from me. I used to do live sound in churches for years and like just turning up and just knowing that everything's in the right sockets and just start going.
Yeah. I miss having a console workflow. I used to have one. You know, the way I'm currently working, a 24-channel tracking console of some description would work for me. I used to work for SSL and I did consider buying the XL desk. The problem for me with that was fan noise in the room. The device has a bit of fan noise.
Yeah.
But having something where I can relocate the power supply out of the studio if it's got a fan in it, or if it's a small enough device that it doesn't need a fan, that would be an important feature. I looked at the API, the box, recently, and that for me has, I don't need a summing device. I don't want 24 channels to sum and then have and not be able to bounce out in Pro Tools. So for me, a tracking console that is 24 channels or even maybe 16 would be acceptable. And then once it's in the computer, it stays in the computer. That would be my hybrid workflow approach.
That would be my way. I wouldn't mix through this thing, but
no.
But even though I said, like, looking at Chris, mix tracks through his boards, but. I'm a singer-songwriter, so I don't record bands. I don't record drum kits. So having 4 inputs is not a problem for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Being a drummer, I do have mics set up pretty much permanently here. So
we'll
I can
Glenn
track
John's
drums.
Trick.
I use anywhere from 3 to 12 mics, depending on what I'm doing. I would look at 16 to 24 channels as a tracking console and do it that way. And so when I used to, what did I have for a while? I was still recording in stereo. I had a Mackie rack mount line mixer that I had a bunch of mic preamps plugged into. And then having I think they call it the alt bus in the Mackie mixer, where you can send something to your stereo input on your audio interface. And I really like that. You know, everything just stays in line. And then when you want to record, you press a button, not unlike the hybrid engine. You press a button, that goes into your audio interface, you track, and then you've got 2 tracks coming out of your audio interface into that mixer. That's a great workflow.
Mm.
And having something, what did I then move to? I think I moved to a Mackie 8 bus console, which has a similar sort of workflow. Real faders. What are they? 100 mil faders on the Big Six, I think?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
they're proper
great,
faders.
Great, proper,
as well.
Professional.
They're not crap faders.
Yeah, yeah. Not limited.
Yeah.
Mm.
I remember I used to have a little cheap, you know who I'm talking about, German company.
I can't imagine.
That we all love. I had one of those. And it wasn't that bad, actually. And I used to love just having things plugged into it and just turning them up quickly. There's something to be said for it. So, watch this space. I might change my mind, but I think it's pretty good.
I think it's
a great product, whether I buy it or not. I think it's a brilliant product. Mm. I think it's what the 6 should have been in the first place, but I get why they made the 6
We had that conversation about it, because that was my point, was the 6 was definitely more in my ballpark, because the big one would be too big. The one thing that I would say about this is that the fact that you can buy something that's appropriate and new for an analog console is a big, big selling point, just because I've been around too many secondhand analog consoles that look like a great idea and almost invariably are just a bag of pain, a total nightmare. There's a reason why you can buy what looks like a very desirable analog console for next to no money. And this is there's an awful lot of things I'm perfectly happy to buy secondhand, and analog consoles aren't one of them.
I have a friend who's studio. He's actually he runs the studio in my village where SSL started, and he's winding up. He's retiring, and he's got a 24 channel Soundtracks Jade, I think it might be, console. And
I love Soundtracks products. I wish they still made them. They were brilliant.
Yeah, and it's an amazing console, but it weighs as much as the moon, and you can't get it out. He's not going to be able to get it out of his studio without taking everything else out first. And what are they worth now? You know, the maintenance alone on the power, running the,
just 400 quid.
Exactly. You know, it's a big problem. He's also got some of those massive Yuri monitors, which are so fitted in the wall.
What, the one with the blue
yep,
dispersion horn on it?
Yeah, yeah. So that's proper old school.
Something
facility.
Else that's worth.
I've helped him price up some of the equipment. It's like, okay, well, what here would I want for myself? And as much as I would love massive wall mounted, sofa mounted monitors and a great big console, it'd look impressive as hell. No, I don't think I will. Mm. Not this time.
Yeah, and with the direction power bills are going, previously unsustainably expensive to run large consoles are now positively ruinous. I mean,
exactly. You know, Imagine trying to run an old E-series or something now.
Yeah, no, definitely. Mm. Okay, well, but yeah, small, modern, low power consumption, cool running is definitely
something you can turn off at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Okay.
Should we do one more thing? One more thing, yeah. So the one more thing is, and I think James will come up with me on this one, is that probably product of the year for me was the M1 Max, without a doubt. It's absolutely stunning. It's without, even with the shortcomings of compatibility with some plugins and some hardware at the moment. And even running it in Rosetta 2, it's just a stunning machine. It's just like there used to be a sketch where a guy was going, hit me in the stomach. Do you remember? He seems like a tough guy, and he said, hit me, see how hard you can hit me, see if you can hurt me. And it feels like the Mac does that to me. It's like almost zero heat off them, zero noise off them. It's for me, it's the computer I always dreamed of having in a studio, which is basically sitting here next to me now, just not batting an eyelid, and it never does. You can throw real amounts of firepower at it from a session, and it just looks at you and says, oh, is that all you've got?
Come at me, see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, it's like that. I don't know what your thoughts are, James.
Yeah, I've got a 14-inch. You've gone for the 16, is that
we've
right?
I've got the 14. You've got the 14. Mike's got the 16.
Ah,
I've got the Thornton.
Everything on it, M1 Max with 64 gig of RAM and you know, 2 terabyte hard drive. It's, as a portable, the best computer I've ever owned. As a desktop replacement, if I didn't have the need for an HDX card, I could run my whole studio off this without any problem whatsoever. There's enough power there to do it. Like I still think there's an argument to be made for a recording studio, for certain types of recording studio, to have the form factor of a tower. Will I be looking at whatever Apple come out with in a tower format, either a full tower or maybe they do a cut down sort of mini Mac Pro type thing? The problem I've got is I've got a lot of money invested in my current machine, so it would depend on that.
Because you've got a 2019 cheese grater.
Yes, which cost a fortune. And I don't think the M1 equivalent will, which is a great thing. So I'm probably not looking at changing from that immediately, but this machine does absolutely everything. I've done a lot of benchmarking of – let me pull up my benchmarking – of this machine. The single core, the MacBook Pro, this machine, the 14-inch, is 40% faster than my Mac Pro Tower. There's the single core score for the Mac Pro Tower is 1129. The single core score for the MacBook Pro is 1776. That's ridiculous. You know, it defies all logic, really. This is a real sea change of computing. Where do you remember in the, I guess it'd be the 90s, when if you were doing some word processing, you would have to close down your internet browser in order for it to happen. Yeah. And then they reached a point where you wouldn't have to do that. You could effectively have all your apps open at once. And then for a long time, audio applications were the thing that stressed the machine. And now I can pretty much have all of my applications open and my audio machine running. And that's been the way it has been for a while. I think we're approaching the point where even video, which has been the thing that has been stressing computers the most, where these machines are so powerful that you'll be able to use your video editing software the way in which you use your word processor. It just runs, and you don't have to be sitting there waiting, okay, well, I need to render something and it's going to take me 40 minutes to do it.
Yeah, It just gets on with it.
Yeah.
It's just
coffee sales are going to collapse, aren't they?
Yeah. So
But
the other thing that's really interesting is the multi-core score from this machine is nearly as good. So the multi-core score I get from the Mac Pro Tower is 13920. This machine, the 14-inch, is 12563. So
Tower cost you?
Sorry?
What did the tower cost you?
$10,000.
And what did the Mac cost you?
$4,000.
$3,000. $4,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
It's crazy.
And when anybody ever starts to talk to me about this and uses the old paradigm of Intel to try and discuss it with me, I have to say to them, stop. Just don't think like that. You cannot. Don't think about RAM like you did before. Nope. Don't think about heat like you did before. Don't think about power like you did before. Like most of the doors we've done tests on, their CPU meters are melting down on the screen, but the Mac is going, okay, should we keep going?
Yep.
Like the meters are redding out and saying we're at 100% CPU because the meters don't seem to react to how the Mac is really working at
They're not optimized yet because we're still – and this is still using Rosetta. Like we're not even there yet.
I know,
With how powerful these machines are. And, you know, the next iteration, they will eventually do a tower and I assume an iMac's coming pretty soon as well. You know?
Yeah, my iMac Pro is apparently next with dual chips.
Wow.
Which would be insane. Yeah. So watch this space. No, so there we go.
I actually tried. I think I went from a G5 tower, and it took me a while to buy a Mac Pro. I tried running my studio office. Do you remember the 17-inch MacBook Pro?
Yeah.
An Apogee Rosetta 800. And I tried to – I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to have one computer, and I'm going to try and run my studio off that. I lasted, I think, about 3 months trying to do it. I could absolutely do it with this machine.
I clamshelled my 2019 and ran it in the studio, but the fan would run up like a 747 was about to take off.
Yeah, which is a complete deal breaker and kills any recording.
Yeah, it does. Whereas in the studio now, it's sitting here in clamshell. Yeah. It's sitting on my desk.
I've never heard this fire up the fan. It might be running.
Yeah, I know.
I have no idea.
You went there first.
I've joked several times that I don't believe there's fans in them and Apple just claim they're off. Because I've never heard that.
I remember when you were talking about doing the clamshell thing with your Intel MacBook Pro, Russ, and it was. I was very vocal about the whole fan thing because I'd tried to do something similar with an old 15-inch MacBook Pro that I had. It was a work machine, and I used to use that, and it knew when I opened a microphone, it's whoo, and there it'd go. The thing that strikes me is that, I mean, I use a Mac Mini here. It's powerful enough. It's showing its age. I forget how old this one is, 2018, I think. It's not going to be around in a couple of years, definitely, possibly less. But the point is, that's not the pain point. I can work with this. And now I do work, and it's good from a kind of work discipline point of view. I do my work in my studio, and it helps me, you know, draw some kind of distinction between work and not work. But those times when I need my laptop, My MacBook Pro is a 2012 MacBook Pro. I've not replaced it because it's been a case of which computer am I going to upgrade, because it's not going to be both. And because of the way I work, it's been my studio machine, like it would be. But it's left me with a pretty unviable MacBook Pro for MacBook Pro, it's the only laptop I own, for anything. And I'm not talking about audio work here. I'm talking about just kind of, you know, just updating stuff on the site or anything like that. I mean, the thing that gets you first, actually, is the screen size, screen resolution, because you can't do anything and you can't see anything because, you know, the web moves on and things get bigger and, you know, you get windows coming up on websites, the bottom of which go down below that, and there's no way you can get to the go away button, this kind of stuff, you know? Anyway, all that goes away. The next computer I get will be a clamshell Apple Silicon machine, of course it will, and I can finally not have to choose this computer or that computer or go, well, I can effectively double my spend and buy two new machines. It can just be one, and this is just win-win-win for me, and it's the biggest, because what we're looking at here isn't a computer that's twice as powerful, although it might well be, but from my point of view, it's a computer that's half as expensive because it can fulfill two roles in a way that I just wasn't prepared to try with an Intel machine. That's huge for me.
I think Apple really nailed the screen size on the 14. I'd bought the 13 M1 and found it too small, and, you know, occasionally, like you say, I would go into WaveLab or go into Logic or other applications, and certain things wouldn't quite appear on the screen the way you want them to. The 14 mitigates all that, so it is super portable. Mm.
Yeah, it's a beautiful machine.
Unsurprisingly, we had quite a lot to say about M1 Max, but we should jump in and quickly. We should do our finds of the week, because we have some finds of the week.
RSPE Audio Solutions design, sell, and install professional audio and video equipment. Their team are available by phone, live chat, or email to receive and process orders. They have everything you need to build or upgrade your home studio to ensure you can continue to work from home. If there is anything they can do to help, reach out or shop online at rspeaudio.com.
James, tell us about your find of the week.
Well, mine is a little application called Duet Display, and it allows me to use my iPad that is sitting in the studio as a second display, either wired or wirelessly, and it is cross-platform. In the conversation we had before we started, apparently others have been using this for some time, but I hadn't had any visibility of this application. Suddenly found myself with a need to do it, and because I'm cross-platform using a mixture of Windows 11 and Mac OS, there wasn't much out there that would allow you to do that. Of course, I can just use Sidecar on a Mac. But having something that allows you to, for me, it's mostly metering plugins, to be able to put them up on the iPad away from the main display has been very, very helpful. So, yeah.
I'm going to have to name check the what's it called? Decibel, which is the thing that... they're not Pure Mix. The Process Audio, who are kind of to do with Pure Mix, but it's a metering plugin that allows you to do exactly that. You can only run that plugin on it, but if what you're after is metering, then it's a cool thing. So check it out. I like it. Mm. I tried it and I got very enthusiastic because it did exactly that. Yes, and I had loads of people telling me I should use Sidecar. So you know.
What about you, Russ?
Mine is a bit of relaxation time. I've been watching Stay Close on Netflix, which is an eight part just mad show about a woman who had a previous life, and she's linked to other people as well. It's just a great show, and there's a couple of characters called Barbie and Kenny who is basically psychopath killers but do dance routines before they kill people.
I've seen a bit of this. I wasn't watching it, but I came in the room while Max was watching
it's an incredible show. It's an incredible show. The other thing, if you want a piece of tech, though, Clevgrand, just before Christmas, released a thing called Razzle, which is a shaker in your iPhone. It's free of charge.
Wow.
It's an iOS app. It's brilliant. And you get a shaker, and you get sleigh bells, and you get a tambourine, and it works. It really, and you just can stand next to a microphone and just shake along. Or if you're in a band, you can play it, use it in the studio and stuff and things like that. It's really
clever. That is really clever, because all of those hand percussion things are all have physical latency anyway, so you could compensate for it and it'd probably feel okay.
It's absolutely. I'll play it to you guys now if you want. I'll just give you a quick thing down the mic and just see which instrument would you like me to demonstrate to you guys. Here's the egg.
Oh, wow.
And here's the shaker.
I didn't know about this.
Looking
and
at the
app. We should put it on the site, actually. Here's the tambourine. And there's different settings. There's a loose one. And there's a tighter one.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, that tambourine's not very realistic because it's not taking my head off and drowning out everything else in the band.
And then bells?
Oh, that's brilliant. I didn't know
that. So I could do Santa Claus? Yeah. Mm. Make more money than Mariah Carey next Christmas? So there we go. We'll put it on the website this week.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll send you a link to it, Jules.
Cool, excellent.
It's called Razzle, and it turns your phone into a percussion instrument. Really clever, excellent. And it's free from Clev Brand.
Perfect, okay. Mine is, after much prevarication and wondering what I should do and coming up with all sorts of alternative plans involving MIDI controllers and potentially iOS devices, and I don't, which all would have worked. A Nord Electro 6 came up quite local to me, and I went, oh, sod it. So I went and bought it, and I've gigged it since. Christmas. And it's just, it's proper, an actual instrument. I absolutely love it. Oh, it's the 73-key model with the waterfall keys, because this gig I'm doing is quite a lot of organ stuff. So I've got physical drawbars, waterfall keys for palm glisses, all of that stuff. And, next stop I'll be Jimmy Smithing it up like you wouldn't believe. It's a wonderful thing. So, yeah.
If I could have a quick third, I got the Lego roller coaster for Christmas from my wife. It's a massive model. It's got 4,500 pieces. It's about 0.5 meter long when it's built.
Very appropriate for 2021 as well.
It's brilliant. I'm having a great time building
Excellent.
It. Excellent. It's just adorable.
Perfect.
Yeah, big kidding. This is the first podcast we've done an hour on forever.
There we go.
It was worth it. It was a review of the year.
There's a lot to say. We'll see what it comes out as post-edit and we'll cut out the dross. But anyway, there we go. That's all we've got time for this week. So thanks to Russ and James for sharing their thoughts on 2021. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Production Expert Podcast.